On this episode of Pottages,
we are looking forward to all the new episodes of The Disappointment of All the Love.
But what if Renamon teaches Ryo feminism?
No, let's just get rid of Ryo.
I need a password.
You can use mine to get on the internet.
Pottages!
Welcome to Pottages, episode 307.5, Rika's Feedback of Unfortunate Events.
Digital World Part 1 Feedback and App Monsters News!
Thank you for reading it like that.
Recorded May 26, 2016.
Pottages is your critically nostalgic analytical tour through the Digimon anime. I'm Jeff Ruberg and I'm joined by Ashton McDonald.
Wildcat in the house. Everybody say it now.
What?
Just introduce me.
I'm not going to give you time to explain.
Introduce
that.
Me!
Wait, Asher's off.
Now it's gone. You killed it. You killed the momentum. We're all in this together.
I don't remember the rest of the words. Blah, 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 blah.
Why did that come up for you all of the sudden?
And Andrew Softman.
Wildcat? I played a cello.
Okay.
It came up because I'm never going to forgive Ryo for calling Rika a wildcat, and now I'm just going to make fun of how ridiculous it is over and over.
Okay.
And apparently we're all High School Musical songs.
We're
this
all
week,
in High School Musical so. Together.
Yes. So in case you are joining us for the first time in a Pottages Feedback episode, this is normally a chance where we have to talk about mostly just feedback about the last episode that came out. But this one's a little bit special because there's been massive news. And then we normally talk about news, but it's usually like a little thing we glide through just to like mention what's going on in current Digimon events. But this week there's actually massive news. So yeah.
It destroyed the Digimon fandom.
So now we're going to dive into Digimon news. We're going to start off with the smaller stuff and then move into the huge thing. So first off, most of this news comes from this month's issue of V-Jump. V-Jump's confusing. It's actually the July issue, even though we're in May. The July issue comes out May 21st. So anyway, most of this was leaked before the issue came out, and then it came out, so we got official confirmation. So anyway, the first thing was that there is a new 15th anniversary version of the D-Arc Digivice toy. So right now, they announced a red and blue version. So that's Takato's color and Ruki's color. Which I thought was really notable because we have had a discussion a couple times of whether the marketing arm of Digimon considers is there a word for like rival deuteragonist? The primary foil like the Matt or the, I guess there isn't one in 02 so much.
The lone wolf.
Yeah. Well, not quite. I just mean like who like the second billing is, I guess. And this kind of, I don't know if it's making it clear, but this is pointing towards the marketing machine considering Ruki that. So we were kind of talking about how like the fandom considers Henry that, or whatever his name is. So this is interesting news. It's probably because like Tri, they've realized that as the fandom has aged, there are a lot more female fans than they, I think, realized before. And so I think it makes sense to be like, they'll like Ruki's color better, but who knows?
No. I think it's mainly because Ruki's color is blue, and pretty much every past release has been a warm color in blue, so it kind of goes with that theme.
That's true, but also Rika is much more memorable than Henry. Look, as much as I love the guy,
I think Renamon is, like, Terriermon is cuter than Renamon, but Renamon's, like, cooler.
Well, I don't know. I mean, they're not really, with the Digivices, they're not really marketing the Digimon on them. And I think I agree that, like,
I don't think they're really marketing the characters either.
Yeah, they're not marketing anything, really. I mean, the Digimon are more prominent on this.
Color-wise, red and blue is much more striking than, what is Henry?
Red and green.
That's like Christmas. Maybe to you, Jeff.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
Because, like, red and green are complementary colors to most of us, and the contrast is actually more striking.
Okay, I was just looking at the page, or the announcement.
I didn't want it to be Christmas.
I was looking at the page and was like, huh, it's green and blue, not red and blue. So, yeah, I'm not so good at distinguishing red and green.
Yeah, but the red and blue are traditionally hero colors that market well, I guess. So
it's also the colors of the logo. Like the Digimon Tamers logo itself is red with like a blue border and fading into yellow.
Mm.
Anyway, yeah. So I mean, more information about this. Pre-orders aren't going to start until July 22nd. That's through the premium Bandai store, which has no way to order outside of Japan. So you have to go through intermediaries and stuff like that. No price or shipping date listed. So kind of just, it's going to happen announced at this point. And also tied into this Digivice toy is a card set, which is going to be sold separately. And we're going to have, we're going to have links to these announcements and also links to images of all this stuff in our show notes. So if you want to see that, you can go to pedagogy.com/307.5. But yeah, so the card set, that one, they announced when it's going to ship and the price, which is price is going to be about $60 US converted from yen and shipping in January, but they didn't announce the price or shipping of the Digivice itself. That's kind of weird. And the card set includes 65 cards, 59 of their old cards, and then there are like six new special ones. The one that I thought was notable is that there's going to be a red card, like a blue card, but red version. And I was like, huh, is that a thing? Is that a thing in the
show?
A red card is a soccer thing.
It's a major spoiler.
No, it's a soccer thing.
Actually, Ash, it's a Final Fantasy Tactics Advance thing.
I'm pretty sure soccer came out before Final Fantasy Advance.
I think soccer's main influence is Final Fantasy Tactics Advance for the Game Boy Advance.
I'll fight you.
yeah, now that you mention it, Andrew, I think I remember what the red card is in Tamers.
It's a very major thing in, like, the last episode.
It's what they use to murder someone. They just, like, they just take a blue card and stick it in someone's abdomen and it turns red from blood. That's what it is. And also included in this card set is a replica of Takato's tin that he has in the show, which is a thing, apparently. I saw that and I was like, oh, that's really cool. And I was like, wait, they just take, like, a tin. Like, it's really cheap. Like, it's not a thing. It's not actually that big of a deal.
Hey, tins are very collectible items.
I guess if they're charging $60 for a set of cards that are mostly reprints. So.
It is still cheaper than the 15th anniversary or whatever sets those were. Because those fetch for like thousands of dollars now.
With sets of cards?
I think it was the 15th anniversary.
Of Adventure?
No, of the franchise.
Okay, because this is 15th anniversary for Tamers. So it might be kind of confusing if people aren't keeping up that, like, there was 15th anniversary for Adventure, which is when Tri was announced 2 years ago, and now it's 2 years later, so now we're on to the 15th anniversary of Tamers. Anyway, the next thing, more Tamers, still more Tamers news, which is nice for us thematically for our show, since we're in Tamers. But also in V-Jump, there was a tease of Takato and Gilmon Mega House figures. Speaking of V-Jump, I just got in the mail today the issue, and it is cool to look out. But anyway, and then after we saw that tease in the magazine, there was, I guess, they officially announced pre-orders of those figures, and also lots of images, so you can look in our show notes to find all the cool images of them. They look really cool. Beelzemon, it's Beelzemon Blast Mode in Emon, and it looks really cool. Oh my god, though. Ugh. So both of these are pre-orders on their Bandai Shop and Toei site. Pre-orders until August 1st, then they ship in October. Oh god, but the Emon and Beelzemon figure costs 14,000 yen converted to US dollars is $130 after tax. And oh my god, that's a lot of money. The Rika and Renamon one is cheaper. It's $57 after tax. But yeah, they're not on any sites that ship to the US, not any stores that ship to the US. So if you want to get them, you have to go through an intermediary with the will included instructions on how you can do that. It's basically sites where you go and give them a link to the Bandai page and then tell them to pre-order it, tell them to order it, and then you get it. They ship it to you. It's not quite shady. Like, they're established and they have good reviews, and also people with the will can attest to whether they work well or not. But I don't like to have like human interaction in order to order something. Like, I'm like, okay, as soon as it's on a storefront, I'll do that. But having to be like, email someone and be like, please get this for me. So yeah, and there's going to be a lot of markup with that. I don't know what the markup rate normally is, but so it's not just going to be $130. Beelzemon's going to be like, I don't know, a ton more. So the next newsy thing, they announced DigiFest 2016, a Digimon Adventure Festival. It's basically two performances on July 31st in Tokyo.
Like concerts?
What do they list them at? What do they describe it as? I think it was like two live performances. So probably concert? So I don't know. But I don't know. probably, but they list it as like a noon performance and a night performance. So probably concerts, but I think they said there might be more news about what's going on there. So who knows what it's going to really be. Tickets are on sale through a lottery, and that ticket pre-orders are through a lottery. And that lottery starts on May 28th. Hopefully this episode comes out on May 27th. So maybe you can do that. I don't really know. If you follow the link, we'll have in the show notes too, where you can find instructions for that in Japanese. So if you cannot, if you're not fully versed in Japanese, that's not going to help you at all. So yeah, so now on to some sad news. The seiyuu voice actor of Sora in the Japanese version of the original Adventure in 02, Yuko Mizutani, passed away last week. And yeah, there are a lot of outpouring of grief and stuff on social media. And yeah, it's sad. I'm realizing now, as I say this, that we haven't released our tribute to Wadakoji yet, which I'm hoping to get out next week. But so lots of Digimon deaths in the community recently, and that's pretty sad. I don't think any of us personally had too much of a connection with the Japanese version or with the seiyuus from the Japanese version, so I don't...
Actually...
I was going to say it didn't really hit most of us personally, but did it hit you?
I mean, in the last few years, I became a really big Tenchi Muyo fan, and then I, like, a few days after the news, I was like, wait a minute. The Tenchi Muyo franchise is doomed, and they're planning on releasing another OVA for the original series, and it's going to be really depressing because Yuko Mizutani plays one of my favorite characters.
Hmm.
Who does she play?
And it's not Mihoshi.
Oh, that's right.
So now I'm actually not really looking forward to this.
Hmm, sad. But now on to happier, hopefully, news. Exciting. So the big reveal. All of this news basically came out last around middle of last week. And this is the huge bombshell dropping, which I assume anyone listening to this has probably heard through grapevines, through social media, or whatever. If you're deeply involved in the Digimon fandom, it's been like a huge, oh my god, huge thing. If you're like tangentially involved in Digimon, it's like, okay, huh, a new thing. So there is a new series cross-media project thing called Digimon Universe App Monsters, and it's a collaboration project among Bandai and Bandai Namco Entertainment and Toei Animation. First of all, I didn't realize they were like that Bandai and Bandai Namco Entertainment were separate entities.
Yes.
Maybe that's just on me. But yeah, so it's the project is launching fall 2016. Granted, I'm not really sure what fall 2016 means. So in terms of anime, in the context of anime, I know like that means October.
That's around it's like end of September, October. Yeah. But since it's more of a children's entry, it could air.
Nothing is actually confirmed. That's more of a children's entry. That's leading speculation, which I
no. But for franchises like this, it could air like before a little later than normal stuff during the season.
Okay. But so it's launching somewhere around the fall of 2016, assuming everything goes according to schedule. It's been described as a monster-sized project. And it includes, so the reason that everyone's speculating it's more of a children-oriented franchise or franchise entry is that it's going to be hobby products, which includes toys, etc., and a game and a TV anime. So that seems like the kind of, unlike Try, which is mostly an animation thing with some premium accessories going along with it are really expensive, this is more of a back kind of to Digimon's roots of like toys and other things to market the toys. So yeah, and to explain why we're kind of all vague about this is that the information that's been released is basically a single page in the V-Jump magazine, and then a couple of different sites, but actually like not really containing any new information except for one key bit. So the key paragraph that's been revealed online is there was a press release which kind of rehashed most of the same information, and this one new paragraph which said, "The key is the smartphone applications used by everyone around the world. Within these apps lurk artificial intelligence life forms called app monsters, also known by the shortened name Appmons. These monsters only exist for the number of apps that exist." So, yeah. It seems like maybe what they're heading towards is maybe not even Digimon, maybe like a category alongside Digimon or a subcategory of Digimon. All that kind of unclear, but
it's definitely going to be a subcategory.
Definitely according to what though? It's all just speculation at this point.
It's still Digimon.
It's Digimon Universe: App Monsters. So it could be like this is another entity that exists in the Digimon universe. Everything's up to speculation at this point, so I don't think we should be saying definitely or anything like that.
Yeah.
But it's still Digimon.
We'll see, Andrew.
The franchise is still Digimon.
We will see. There are digital creatures that are not Digimon. We have seen them in every season.
They should just launch Genimon.
Virtual pet Geni.
you just rub like an old person's head digitally.
Yeah. Yeah, you feed him. What does he like to eat? Do we know?
We never fish. See him eat.
Oh.
Anyway, so the other bits of things. So, I mean, we'll have a link in the show notes to the, basically the, they eventually released the clean magazine spread, not spread, magazine page, which includes a bunch of different icons that, like, they look like app icons. You know, like, there's a music app, a maps app, I don't know, a glove app, a clock app, which is by alarm or something. And I don't know what the last one is. First and last one, I don't know what they are, but...
Can I take over?
And what do you want to say? There's no taking over.
Speculation time.
Wait, no. Okay, before you get to speculation, so there's that image. The image includes a thing at the bottom, which may be a Digimon, maybe an Atmon, whatever that is. I think it also looks a little bit like Hackmon. Andrew argues it doesn't look like Hackmon. And the other thing is there is a background image. This is from one of the sites. They have information on, there's a background image that, you know, has a bunch of random nonsensical code, but also a couple of different pictures, which look like it's those icons in kind of monster Digimon-ish forms. So that's all the information we have. Andrew, take it away with your speculation.
Okay, so going on that, of course we have the icons for apps, and then there's the main Digimon, which is clearly based on, like, the search app. It has a magnifying glass attached to its hat, but it's like one of those special ones that can change like distance.
You mean like the lens? It looks like you can change the lens?
No, it doesn't really change lens. It, like, you know, on binoculars, you can change it so it goes further closer.
Sure. That exists for magnifying glasses?
There are magnifying glasses that act like that.
Huh. So you're saying that monster at the bottom of this page is based on the like icon at the top.
It's mainly based on the search icon, and then it might actually be based on other apps as well. It is not one app, because if you notice, he also has headphones on.
Does he?
Yeah, kind of like Shoutmon.
Where are these headphones?
Which image are you on?
I'm on the page from the magazine.
Do you see the things that would be where his ears are?
I see a thing on the left. It looks like it's part of the hat.
Those look like headphones, right?
Not to me.
My theory at the moment are that Atmon are kind of like a variation on Digimon that have like adapted to use apps. So out of the monsters we've seen several, including two, like a Clockmon variation and what's possibly its evolution. The main Digimon, a Digimon that looks like an evolution of the main Digimon, a Digimon that acts like a notification system, some Digimon that looks kind of like Diaboromon or whatever. There's a icon for a there's a picture of a calendar, but I can't tell what's going on with that. And then there's my favorite, which is a Digimon based on a diary, but based on what they have, the Clockmon variation is obviously a clock, but if you notice, its fists look like the icon for the fist, which I believe would be like a game application, so like maybe a fighting game or something. But the Clockmon is a combination of the clock and that other app, and then it would evolve using another app and become that other dragon like Digimon. And the same thing with the main Digimon, who I'm gonna say is the based on a search engine and God knows what other than a music app, and then it becomes a higher level Digimon using a camera app, which would, at least I think it's a camera, but it's definitely a camera with like multiple lenses that it could switch between two, but the Digimon has like a ton of them.
Okay, I feel like this is really hard to follow along if you're not looking at the specific things you're talking about. So you're saying the main icons are what we're looking at. If you look at the magazine page, their icons are all at the top. There's the
right.
The spotlight on the left, and then a row of them to the right. So there's the spotlight or the magnifying glass and notifications, music, maps, glove, clock, and camera thing. And then if you look at the background image, which includes like portraits of various Digimon. So the one you're talking about now, with it, you're saying looks like the main one plus the camera, is I think the one like in the middle, kind of.
It's like the one directly below it.
Right. Well, it's like
they're in a very similar pose.
It's like a little middle and to the left a little bit, and it's like kind of behind some text.
Right.
And then but then above it, there's like looks like him, but without the three things. But also maybe a little different. But yeah, and the clock one's to the right of that with his clock, and he has like three wristwatches on him, which I think is kind of funny.
Four, actually.
Well, one of them is his arm, one of them is his hand, and then three
right
watches on his arm, which reminds me of like a clock app having like several different alarms.
Oh, that makes sense. But yeah. The one I want to talk about the most is the one that's the diary.
So the diary, that's in the middle horizontally, and then near the top of the page. And that's the one that has like a pen, like a, what's it called? Like the old fashioned pen that like ink comes out of it. Nib.
A pen, whatever. But I really like this Digimon design because it is like, cause it's, basically a record. Like it uses three different types of records in its concept. Like you have like a diary system, but if you notice in its left hand thing, that's a microphone. So it's also a...
Oh, is that what that is?
It's a notation app as well, but...
Well, no, I think it's like, it's like both of its arms are pens and then its tail is a microphone.
Oh, I thought it was holding it, but that also makes sense. But then it also has a key and a keyhole for its eye. So it's also a record, as in it stores stuff.
I'm reserving judgment on this until I see it in not just this one action pose, because like the idea of a thing that like is a diary for a head, kind of like that might not work in practice as moving around and stuff. It kind of how it actually looks outside of the one pose, I think, is critical to how much I looked at like the design of it.
No, but I really like this concept for a Digimon.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm totally buying your theory now that these seem to be combinations of apps. And then, like, maybe that's instead of Digivolution, there's combination.
Like, it could be sort of like DigiCrossing, but I'm guessing there will be apps that are incompatible with certain Appmon.
Or you know what it could be also like Digimon combining with apps. You know, like,
I've been saying.
No, but I mean, like...
Or trying to.
Not like two different apps coming together, but like a Digimon like puts on the clock app to fight or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, they're Digimon that are compatible with apps because they've adapted to the current landscape of the digital world, which would be our smartphone technology.
Mm.
Kind of like how the X-antibody Digimon, evolved to survive in the digital world back then. It's just another variation on the Digimon ecosystem and so forth.
But it kind of reminds me, what it could be is something like... They didn't really do this as much in Kingdom Hearts, but like there's the potential there in a couple of different worlds in Kingdom Hearts where like you go to the world and like Sora's outfit is just different. And they do it in Kingdom Hearts 2 with the menu is different. I think Birth by Sleep 2 and maybe the other, and a bunch of different games do this with like the menu changes based on what world you're in. So maybe that like it could be like Digimon, like the apps are settings, and when they go to a different setting, they kind of like morph to fit its setting. That's a possibility.
Maybe.
The apps could be characters. The apps could be. I think it's promising to take, like, what we thought of as digital in 1999 is very different when we think of digital now. So I think it's interesting. Like Cyber Sleuth had a take on what like Digimon in a real world digital setting would mean. I think this is interesting. It's very similar to that. That smartphones and stuff are like critical to our lives now. So. Seeing what Digimon means in that context, I'm intrigued by.
And actually, I have one more thing that's pure speculation, but I feel like I have like something leading to the main Digimon's name. And if you notice the placement of how the... Well, not the placement, but the angle at how the magnifying glass is, it looks like a Q. Like, it looks like a Q in the logo. It looks like a Q on the Digimon or Appmon or whatever. So I'm thinking that similar to Digimon like Vmon, and I suddenly can't remember any other Digimon that starts with a letter as its name.
I mean, there's XVmon.
XVmon.
But I feel like the Digimon's name will have something to do with like a Q.
Hmm. Wouldn't be the first time people have used that magnifying glass and a Q. Like the QI British TV show is basically an I and a Q.
No, but... I have a really fun name for this Digimon if it's based on the search app. I feel like that they could potentially name this Digimon like query.
Sure.
Like a how do you pronounce it?
Query.
I don't know what word you're going for. Query?
Query, like a question.
Q-U-E-R-Y.
But then there's actually in the series that contains Ultraman, the original series was called Ultra Q, and the Q stood for question.
Okay. I was wondering, like, is query even, is the kind of English word that Japanese people are aware of? And apparently query is, like, that is also a Japanese word used to mean query, so.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Query, it's query, it's query, so it's possible. I don't know how much they're aware of the Q imagery, though.
No, but I feel like it's really intentional.
Yeah, it's also how magnifying glasses are.
No, but you usually hold it, like, with the handle being, like, vertical, right?
No, not on an app, not on the computer.
Yeah, I mean, if you just Google magnifying glass images, they're all slanted. They're not all slanted to the right like this, but they all are all slanted.
Oh, you're right.
I mean, I'm intrigued just because, like, Digimon as an anime has not that many different reincarnations. You know, like, there really isn't that many. So, like, just being new in a, this is, like, totally separate from anything we've seen in Digimon. I'm excited for that.
Okay.
The one thing I noted is just that based on where you're looking at this news, might be some people, especially I think closer to when the leak first happened, calling it two different ways you can read the Japanese that are in the announcement, which is app monsters or apply monsters, like kind of merge into one word. And
oh, like application?
Yeah. So I don't know. I think I've also seen a lot of people be like, oh, that's a really stupid name, apple monsters. What do you all think about if it's a silly name?
I think it's cute because then it's like apple monsters.
You think it's cute?
Great. I love apples.
So you only like it because of the fruit?
Yes. I don't care about Apple computers.
The only Apple product Ash cares about is the iPod, I guess.
Well, anyway, I just wanted to explain, if you're saying both and don't know why or like what it is or whatever, the Japanese word for app is apuri. So the li is actually part of their word for app. So it doesn't really quite seem like what they're going for in Japanese is apply monsters. They might just be saying app monsters, which they would say is apri monsters. So, I mean, they have a word for monsters, but so it's a little unclear at this point. It's all going to be, until we actually have like an official English translation of anything, unclear, but I'm leaning towards app monsters. And I think it's a bit of a stretch because like it's, there isn't any indication that the Japanese name is going for a cutesy hybrid name like Digimon or Digimon Japanese, like, is clearly a hybrid of digital and monsters. Pokemon is clearly a hybrid of Pokemon and monsters in English and in Japanese. In Japanese, it's not a cutesy hybrid, so making it a cutesy hybrid in English seems like a stretch to me. So, anyway, if you see people saying it's definitely Appy Monsters, you can tell them they're wrong.
I think it's more likely that over here, at least, it'll become Appmon.
Or it'll just give it a completely different name.
I also think Appmon just sounds weird and awkward. You almost find that, like, it's just like, some of the cadence just, like, yeah, the put and the mon got, doesn't...
Yeah, you've got a plosive right before I don't know what M is called.
You've got a plosive right before your mosive.
No. It's, I forget. It's been a long time since I did linguistics, but it's hard to go from a p where you're like, it's a stop, and then going into a, you have to close your lips after that. It's difficult.
Like your mouth kind of like, you have to open your mouth making the p, and then you have to close it again.
Yeah. App monsters isn't as bad because I think the extra syllable at the end, with app mon, you've got like, stop, stop, stop. Well, with app monsters, you don't.
App mon's like a roller coaster in your mouth. You're like, what did we do? Because we only went like a couple inches, and you're like, why did we, what?
Yeah, yeah. That's the problem with it, is that, yeah.
Okay, so that was a lot of Digimon news. In conclusion, I just think it's, I said this before, but that it's an exciting time for Digimon. And now it's an even more exciting time because, like, there being multiple Digimon projects going on at the same time. Like, before it was, like, exciting because it was, like, Try is coming out and, like, there are games. But now it's, like, there are going to be multiple anime. Oh, I guess I think I didn't really mention in describing the anime is that, like, this is a, Atmon has been described as a TV anime. But what that most likely means is a weekly airing half-hour show like we kind of expect from anime, not a Like, when Try was announced as an anime, what do they describe it as? An anime series, which a lot of people interpreted as TV weekly airing anime, which they never actually said. They said anime series. This is described as a TV anime series, which does mean they're at least making the promise now that it's going to be a weekly thing, which it did not make with Try. Some people, a lot of people were confused and think that it was promised as a TV anime weekly series. It was never promised as that. So anyway, that's kind of exciting.
It's Yo-Kai Watch.
No. I guess, like, recently, as I've been going through One Piece, I've been kind of comparing Digimon as a franchise to One Piece as a franchise. And it's like, if you're coming One Piece stuff, it's like, there's so much going on. There's like, you know, there's a weekly manga chapter, a weekly anime episode, games coming out, all this, like a movie, all this new, like, just so much stuff going on. It's like more than like a podcast of our size wouldn't be able to handle because there's just so much stuff going on. And I'm like, Digimon is like approaching that. I mean, so I guess I should also go without being said that, like, what our plans are as a podcast for app monsters is totally up in the air. We don't have any concrete plans. I think mostly because we don't have any concrete information about what this is. If it is, like, a lot of people are speculating, more oriented to kids, maybe there's not enough depth for it to be something that we want to cover on a weekly basis. I think it's an open question for all of us if we want to be covering something on a weekly basis. Yeah. If you're excited to hear us talk about it, stay tuned. I don't know.
Definitely not weekly.
I mean, one thing I would consider as a possibility is that, like, maybe Ashley and I would cover it weekly with, like, a rotating series of guests and, like, bring you two on, like, not every week, but...
No, just don't do it every week.
I mean, I don't know if you can really cover a weekly show not doing it every week. I guess you can. Be like, hey, we're going to cover the last 2 weeks.
Do whatever the hell you want.
No. There are rules.
No, they're not.
So let's move on to iTunes reviews. No one caught this, and I feel kind of embarrassed, especially that no one caught it, but I actually went backwards in my iTunes reviews. So we're doing 3 of 7.5 now. 3 of 4.5, we did one review. Then 3 of 5.5, we went to the next one. And then 3 of 6.5, went back to the one we did in 3 of 4.5. So, yeah. So we're going to do two this week.
We're just so excited.
To go backwards? And
it was just such a good review.
What I find is, like, I re-transgarbled it and got totally different results. So it was kind of original content. So yeah, this week we're going to do two to catch up to where we would have been if I hadn't gone backwards. So Ashley, do the transgarble. Oh, wait. Wait, sorry. I said we're going to do two and I didn't actually do two.
Yeah, I was like, there's only one here.
I was like, I see two paragraphs, but that's not how it works. So we're going to do one. We're going to do one.
Okay. This is from Cedar Mill in the UK. And the title is Digimon is Wonderful Again.
The transgarbled title.
Oh, this is the... Wait, what?
Yeah, it's transgarbled first and then original.
Okay, the transgarbled title still makes sense because it says Digimon is Wonderful Again. Fair enough. In the podcast, Good Digimon Behind the Series of Animation, it shows important and nostalgic. Covering everything from the social message of the quality of writing and dub change, presents the theory of the fan. While there, the beginning of your interest is your child is a great way to revive this crasher.
It's not racist transgarble, actually.
You know, whatever. While there, the beginning of your interest is your child is a great way to revive this classic anime of the day to remind me. We are looking forward to all the new episodes of The Disappointment of All the Love.
That's a really good description of Try.
It is worth to ask for fans, Digimon.
I want to just, like, take that as, like, a pull quote for this podcast episode.
And,
like,
I'm better at reading these than I am at actual sentences that you write.
Because the sentences are sensical, and you, like, if your cadence is off of these, it's, like, normal. It's expected.
But I didn't read this before reading it. I was just like, yeah, I'm gonna go with the flow.
No, I know, but, like, the cadence being unnatural is expected.
Okay, this is the actual review. Title is Fantastic Revisit to Digimon. This podcast is
Is an escafone.
I can't do L's today.
You can't do real sentences is what you can't do.
It's also true. This podcast is an excellent critical and nostalgic look back on the Digimon anime series. Covering everything from the quality... What? No, I just skip words now, too. Covering everything from the writing quality and dub changes to fan theories and the social messages of the show. It's a great way to live your childhood and revive your interest in the classic anime franchise. I've loved everything so far and eagerly await each new episode. Definitely worth a listen for Digimon fans.
Or in other words, we are looking forward to all the new episodes of The Disappointment of the Love. So rejected titles for 307. What was the actual title of 307? It was Rika's Series of Unfortunate Events. And yes, which is a reference to a thing, which I recently learned the author, who is not Lemony Snicket, because that's a... Is that even a pen name? Because it's like, is it part of the universe? Is Lemony Snicket like a character in the universe?
What?
It is his pen name. He's also a self-insert character in the universe, yes.
Oh, okay. But anyway, apparently the actual person went to my college, which I found out, because they sent like an alumni email being like, Lemony Snicket's Series of Unfortunate Emails or something.
Jeffrey,
and I was like, what?
Thinks that this is special. However, I go to a monthly event
in which
we read silently and he plays piano for us.
Really?
So, yes.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's
cool. Sorry, Jeff.
You lose, Jeff.
Yeah, you do. I mean, if you want famous people who went to people's schools...
Like, yeah, Asher and I can bust out a lot for you if that's what you really want to play this game.
I can only remember one at the moment, but yeah.
The person who wrote the books of your teenage reenactment of Lost show went to Brown.
You can't go to an... You go to an Ivy League school, like, how... now we're not going to sit there and be like, look at all the famous people that went to my Ivy League school. Like, oh my God. I talk about the people that are famous went to my school because it's like, there are three. You know, like...
I could talk about famous people that went to my high school.
Oh,
well, the Prime Minister of Israel went to our high school, so...
That's true.
Kelsey Grammer went to my high school. Also, one of the dudes that wrote Avenue Q.
Yeah, but isn't the Prime Minister of Israel a bigger deal to your rabbiness?
No.
Fine.
They literally had him write an email. So it says from Lemony Snicket, and it says... The latest in Wesleyan's Series of Unfortunate Emails. Like, really?
It's cool. Not as cool as Ashley's.
Well, that's just bragging.
You could come too. You don't like reading. That's your fault.
Anyway, I realized after we recorded the episode that it probably should have been... I think we were considering like putting Rika Nonaka's Series of Unfortunate Events. But then I was like, that's going to be really, really long. And then I realized it should have been like Rika's A Series of Unfortunate Events.
No.
It's Lemony Snicket's A Series of Unfortunate Events, not Lemony Snicket's Series.
But Rika didn't
write Digimon.
Well, sure. Anyway, so that was... We only had one actual rejected title, because I guess we only really had two choices we were choosing between. And that one, the rejected one
because
was...
Because I threatened to... I was like, this one has to be the title.
What did you threaten to do?
I don't know. I don't remember.
We can go back and change it retrospectively.
No.
No, we can't.
Well, you could. No, wait.
Anyway, the rejected title was Ain't Our First Ryodeo, which...
Ugh, groan.
I think it's great in terms of groaniness.
Ugh, so much groan.
And on to the Ridiculous Dialogue Draft poll results. The winning quote was... Me as I awkwardly stall to get to the soundboard. So the winning quote was this one.
I think Terrier Man is practicing to be a mime.
It'd never work. He'd have to be quiet to be a mime.
Good job, Ashley.
I win! It's been a long time since I won.
And the second place quote was this one.
Look at how barren it's become.
Yeah, this is kind of how I pictured the inside of Kazu's head.
Congrats, Jeff.
Well, wait, aren't we tied?
No, okay.
Yeah, I like how you called it the second place quote when you and Ashley tied.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. So, yeah. So, okay. So, there are two in second place, and the other one in second place is this one from Ashley.
Hurry up, because that bike doesn't look first before it crosses the street.
Yep. But, however, I did win in terms... I won over Ashley in terms of actual points total by host. Asher was first place. And with like twice as what I got. And then I was second place. And Ashley's 1 point below me. And then Andrew, neither of your quotes got any points. So, sorry.
I'm not surprised anymore.
You are the weakest link.
Goodbye.
I'm always the linkest wink.
What?
I am the linkest weak.
Agreed.
Okay, so now on to the Podigest Fantasy Draft. So if you aren't aware what the Fantasy Draft is, basically before the episode comes out, you can... Actually, now, if you're listening to this, you should go and you can participate
right now,
in next week's Fantasy Draft. Yeah, so that's for episode 308. But yeah, so the Fantasy Draft, you pick a team of a human and a Digimon as your fantasy team, and then you get a point. We pick our favorite characters in the episode, and you get a point if any of the characters we pick as our favorite is on your team. So, and then we reconvene here to basically... the points you can figure out from listening to the episode if you got points. But then we also award extra bonus points for the teams that we think are funny. So first award we give is to the team that is most incongruous. So now we're all looking at the list of all of the teams. So May from Lost in Translation Month admitted that they picked a team just to be ridiculous, which is Seiko, Rico's grandmother, and Babamon, and said it was the grandmother team.
But actually, that would work really well.
Yeah, that's like the dream grandma team.
No, I put that down as most wanting team to exist.
Yeah.
There's a lot of weird combinations. Like Rio and Renamon is a weird combination.
Oh, I definitely don't want that to exist.
We don't want it. I don't think it's incongruous so much as grody.
But what if Renamon teaches Rio feminism?
No, just get rid of Rio.
Kazu and Beelzemon, that's pretty strong too.
See, like,
oh, you don't think so?
Of our choices, I feel that is the most incongruous, but like that would actually be kind of interesting.
It would be hilarious because Beelzemon would just destroy Kazu.
It'd be great.
I'll go with that one
for most incongruous.
Yeah,
I'm swayed by that.
Cool.
Do we have a consensus?
I didn't hear Andrew vote at all. I bet he's playing Yo-Kai Watch.
Actually, I'm waiting for you.
Caring.
Waiting for me to what?
Unlock the door.
Okay.
Did you lock him in a closet, Ash?
Yes, I locked him in a closet from where I am in Philadelphia.
Open the door, Ash.
Okay.
Okay, this is a weird interaction. I assume in Wibble Wobble.
Yes.
Wibble Wobble.
Wibble Wobble. Wibble Wobble is hard to say.
Wibble Wobble.
Also, there are enemies in Kingdom Hearts Unchained Key that are called Wibble Wobbles. So
are they? They're not as cute as these are, I bet.
Probably. I don't think we're talking anymore. So most incongruous team we're voting for. We're all in agreement that it's Kazu and Beelzemon. So what's the team we want to exist the most?
Seiko and Babamon.
Seiko and Babamon, man.
I'm not feeling that as strongly as you guys, but I'll go along with it.
Well, I mean,
what are you feeling?
Do you have a counterpoint?
You can vote for your counterpoint.
Yeah.
Like
we can't be outvoted at this point, but we can be tied.
I kind of like Jerry and Gilmon.
I kind of like that too, but like not more like than that. Seiko and Bob.
Yeah,
not,
yeah.
Imagine the tea.
Can we award them each a point? I can because we just make up rules as we go along.
Okay, so we're giving 1 point to Kazu and Beelzemon.
Yes.
And then for most incongruous team, and then 1 point to Jerry and Gilmon. And 1 point to Seiko and Babamon.
Yes.
Cool. So how does that affect the leaderboard? So with that, in the leaderboard, it's still Rika's my favorite in first place, and Emperor Moto in second place, and Erdemon in third place. But if you're listening to this now, you can enter the fantasy draft for the next episode, and there are lots of different ways you can do it. We have a forum post where you can enter, which is at forum.podiges.com. But we're also we accept teams on social media. So if you follow us on Facebook, Tumblr, or Twitter, there'll be a post. And I think for the week that between when we release this episode and we put out the next episode, it'll be pinned on Twitter and Facebook as the top thing. So that should make it easy to find. Tumblr, we can't really do that. But yeah, so those are the different ways you can enter. We should also mention that there's a prize for whoever at the end of the season has the most points. And the prize is the US DVD box set of Tamers plus the Tai Chi and Agumon figure. We have a link somewhere to what these actually are if you're curious what those figures are, because I can't think of the right name for the figure right now.
I mean, it's like original adventure Tai and Agumon, yeah. Not the Tri one.
Right, because there's a Tri one that looks really bad. It's not that one. It's not that one. So, yeah, and there have been people who are participating in all the episodes so far, but we still have, I think, half the season to go, a little less than half the season to go, so there's still plenty to catch up. I'm not going to spoil anything too much, but in the next episode, 308, we've already recorded it, and let's just say you can catch up easily if you pick the right team.
So. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Choose wisely, my friends.
When we announce the fantasy draft, we announce what episodes are going to be. So, like, if you look what those episodes are, you can kind of get a sense for what kind of characters we're going to choose. So, yeah. So now on to voicemails. We didn't get any actual voicemails. I'm blanking words today. I'm just failing words. partially my fault because I purposely didn't remind people because I was like, we have so much to talk about in this episode. So yeah, we did get one. Okay, so this voicemail was not actually voicemail, it was text, but we're going to have RobotMan read it, and it came from Ember Moto on the forum.
Oh my, I'm so excited to have RobotMan read it, actually.
The question, I think, was, what would you say to get a Digimon to follow you in the digital world, to become your Digimon? So here is their response.
The Digimon that I would want to be my partner is a male Pheromon. He protects the historical remains in the digital world from those who would destroy it, so I would appeal to our shared love of history and his want to persevere and protect it. I would mention that if he partners with me, he will be able to travel to places he has never been before, learn about its history and telling others about the history of the digital world that he knows. And if all else fails, I would try to bribe him with the one thing no Digimon can resist: food.
Actually, I speak fast.
You do actually speak faster than that.
Really?
Yes.
I actually am so unclick. I was like, hearing it, I was like, is this 2x speed? Is this what I'm used to from podcasts, or is this normal speed? And I did check in the settings, and it was normal speed.
She's also like clearer fast than you.
Oh, burn. Because
she says Digimon.
Digimon, yeah.
Which I think in Lost in Translation, that's what Jay says to like dry Digimon. They call the Digimons.
Digimons. It's funny.
Yeah. So something that this made me think of is the description of Pheromon sounds so much like Nico Robin from One Piece, as someone who goes around and protects history. And he's like, oh, Robin's the best One Piece character. So I didn't know about Pheromon before this. It looks like it's from Digimon World Dusk.
I was about to ask, is that a real Digimon?
It is. It's one of the evolutions of Coronamon. It's from Digimon World Dusk and Dawn, mainly Dawn.
Whatever, this Digimon looks cool, I approve.
They both turn into one of the Olympus 12. So you've got Apollomon, I believe, who is the mega form for Pheromon.
Oh, I see.
Pheromon's the champion, I think. Yes. And then the other Digimon, who is the partner Digimon in Dusk, is it becomes Dianamon.
Naturally.
Also, it's a rabbit.
I really like the art style from the covers. I should have played these games.
Everyone should have.
The other thing is that like when you look on Digimon Wiki for Digimon, you usually get the card artwork, which I don't like the art style of. And then like for show notes, I always find the anime, the Toei version of it. But for these, since they started with they didn't have card versions, I guess, they just have the designs from the game, I guess, and so they just look nicer.
Actually, I love the DS games because the protagonist characters still look like the original character designs for the Digimon anime.
Mm. Okay, so now this is a weird segment we don't normally have, which is auto feedback, because I realized after recording the episode that there's a lot of stuff that I wanted to say, and then there was stuff that Andrew wanted to say, or things you realize afterwards, and there was stuff that Ashley wanted to say. So I was like, you know, we should probably just like talk about this stuff in the feedback. The first thing is that I totally forgot to mention, I have the perfect reaction image to describe Rio. Let me find it so I can post it in our Slack.
I'm so excited.
And it's from the first episode of Bungo Stray Dogs, which I haven't really seen much more of since I posted it.
Isn't it Bungo?
What did I say?
Bungo.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, I guess you would pronounce that in Japanese, Bungo, but yeah, whatever. I don't even know what word it's going for. Yeah. So it's just someone who I guess was like in a hug position and tossed the character away and just says, I have no such taste in men, which is how perfectly describes Rio. So perfectly describes our reaction to Rio. The next point I have written down was something you realized, Andrew, after we recorded.
Yes. When they're in that castle thing or whatever. What was that place?
Devimon's summer home.
Cyberdramon is there, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he kind of has... I don't know.
Yeah, I don't remember them showing him in the actual bedroom. But like, logistically, he has to be there.
But he should be there, right?
Right. So, there's a trend of... Cyberdramon goes with Rio everywhere and Rio says that Cyberdramon's out of control and attacks random Digimon. But they also sleep in the bedroom or whatever, and there's a patrolling Nightmon, which they just ignore. And the point is like, oh, it's fine as long as you ignore him. Totally forgetting that Cyberdramon apparently attacks things randomly, because those two things would totally, that don't match, and that would totally get into trouble.
Yeah.
I still totally think that it most likely has happened, and he just like, no, it's fine. Also, isn't Nightmon a ultimate?
Yeah.
Because I keep forgetting if it's a champion or an ultimate.
I'm pretty sure it's an ultimate.
I mean, I guess that could be implied that, like, they did get into a fight before, and that's how...
I really didn't think so. I really think they were like, oh, I just didn't think of this. It never came up. And, like, I think in our episode, we talked about how, like, that was just Ryo's cavalier overconfidence, which was frustrating. And to know that, like, even more so, like, this definitely should have been a problem. Not like, oh, yeah, you shouldn't have trusted him, but, like, your Digimon would have attacked. Like, it's even more frustrating. how he's able to just breeze through this world. I have a comment from my coworker who has been watching Tamers recently, and he got to the Babamon Digimon episode and came over to my desk and told me, I finally got to the Jewish Digimon, to which I was like, what?
Asher can't talk anymore.
Well, I mean, my thought was that it's like the, you know, the scene out of The Princess Bride. Did we mention this before?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Oh, with Billy Crystal and I don't know.
Whoever plays the wife.
Yeah, I should know, but I don't. And that is a take on the Jewish old couple. But, I mean, I guess old people stereotypes exist in many cultures.
So I'm trying to remember, because there is, I don't think we talked about it, but I think they are imitating specific voices from Hollywood.
Oh, the dub people are probably imitating Billy Crystal. And,
right, right.
Yeah.
Also, apparently Jewish people try to kill each other when they're bored.
I guess.
Isn't that what you learn in rabbi school, Ash?
Yeah. Got to fight to the death, gladiator style. That's why I'm so tired. It's my last day of finals. I have murdered so many people. This is what goes on in rabbi school.
So I'm trying to look up the character's name.
Mad Max. Or no.
What?
Miracle Max. Sorry.
Wrong franchise.
Yes, okay, yes, Miracle Max. So it's Miracle Max and Valerie from The Princess Bride. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not Mad Max. Not
not
Furiosa.
Mad Max, no.
Well, if we got a Furiosa Digimon, that'd be great. So this is the comment. This is the thing I just realized recently. And is... Does Jerry not have her puppet as soon as she gets Leomon? Like, does she...
Ooh.
Does she just, like... I mean, I think there are scenes before she gets Leomon where she doesn't have the puppet, so it's not, like, a clear one-to-one thing.
I mean, but they... It did... I mean, they go to the digital world. She didn't bring the puppet with her.
Right.
But just, like, there was the one scene where... I mean, if you take it as, like, her brother stole her puppet, and then she took it back briefly.
Oh, I assume that was, like, a thing they always... That he always steals it when he's, like, sleeping with it that one time?
Yeah, but I mean, if we... Yeah, but if we don't see that, then it's, like, it could symbolically be, like, I passed my puppet on my brother. But she also takes it back in that scene. And, like, greets Leomon with it.
I thought it was a living entity.
The puppet?
Yeah, I was convinced when she was talking with it that it was a real thing.
Yeah, I thought...
I thought it was a thing that hatched onto her arm and was drawing her lifeblood. And... I'm confused. You're telling me it's a puppet?
Just go on, Jeffrey.
Yeah, I'm just going to go on. So I think I did a really poor job in our episode kind of complaining about the whole the setting is its own character talk. And it's partially because I chose that as a character and was like, I don't think it's a real thing. Mixed messages. But so I just wanted to elaborate that on a little bit more, which is just like what people talk, like, what does it mean when people talk about a character and what are those like attributes that make a character? And I feel like that a setting doesn't have many of those crucial things.
Like sentience, maybe?
Sentience, yeah. But like, so some things I think that a setting doesn't have, it doesn't have growth, doesn't have relationships, doesn't have preferences, doesn't have thoughts.
They can have relationships. They would just sure. be sort
well,
of one-sided
not, not romantic.
You don't need to be have romantic relationships to be a character.
Yeah, so Hia Lori in our comments mentioned, basically implying, is it, it's not a character because you can't ship it, which I think might be a good metric. I ship Digital World x Human World.
Do you? They really never should meet.
I mean, that is a good scale.
A good metric, maybe like a good
it's
threshold
a
for
good yeah. metric, actually. Yeah.
But yeah, I guess Ashley, you're saying like technically there are like you can have a character's you know like hatred or a character's feelings towards the digital world, towards a setting, be that is like a one-sided relationship. But like I think you kind of need a relationship to be like the and then like how it you can have like how the digital how the setting treats the character kind of. But that's like I think it's stretching the definition of relationship.
I don't know. I actually would count a setting as a character in certain cases. I just don't think Tamers does that well.
Mm. So the notable example that I like made me think about down this line of thought was JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Part 4, whose anime is recently airing.
Yes.
What about that?
Morio.
So you consider Morio to be a character? Morio is the town they live in, by the way. It sounds like a name, but it's the name of a town.
Well, yeah.
Because I was thinking, like, in the sense, like, the only way that Morio has personality is that it's just the aggregate of everyone else's personality. Like, I feel like you think of it nostalgically as, like, oh, yeah, that's like a fun character.
Yes.
But it's really just all the characters. You're thinking of all the characters.
Well, yes and no, because it also affects the characters. Like, there is a small town thing that happens in Morio. And I think I would count Morio as a character. It's just not a character I get a very good read on because I don't have small town Japanese background. Like, I can't pick out what exactly is being, or I can't pick out its character traits very well.
It has a rock that people go to.
Does have a rock that people go to.
I mean, but you can romantic. Definitely argue that rock is a character. Like, literally, there's a character inside of it. Canonically.
Yes, and I would also like not count that character as a character anymore.
Also, like, I like that was totally murder. Like, there's, oh, it's just funny. Like, you just murdered. Like,
no, yeah,
yeah.
That, well, he's not dead, but like, that's even worse.
Oh boy. Talking about it being a small town kind of makes me think of, like, I hadn't thought of it before, but like Twin Peaks.
And you were going to say that.
It's probably a show that people talk about as the town being a character. And
yeah. Trying to think of another one.
Gravity Falls.
I don't know. I only saw
I still just feel like these are all examples of, like, where the hodgepodge of the characters is what we think of as the setting.
But I think the setting also, I think it's a mix of both. I think that when we talk about setting as character, it is the setting and it is the hodgepodge. I would include Beach City from Steven Universe as a character. There is something very distinct about living on a beach.
But that distinctiveness is just the setting. Like,
but there is a back and forth. There's a relationship there.
What about the city of Townsville?
Yes.
What's that from?
Powerpuff Girls. Absolutely.
But isn't that, like, what I think of in that sense is, like, I haven't seen Powerpuff Girls in a while, but, like, I would think of it as, like, the common people, or, like, the...
No, when I think of the city of Townsville, I actually think of the physical city of Townsville. Like, Andrew says the city of Townsville, and I immediately see the skyscrapers made out of basically paper, yeah.
The poorly drawn skyscrapers that, like, are never the same.
When they say that a place has character, I think maybe you don't have an expansive enough... or maybe you have too many criteria for characters, and that's why we're not agreeing on this. Like, you have too many according to my standards.
Like, I don't have any disagreement with saying, like, a setting has character.
Right.
It's like, is character, I think, is crossing the line.
I think it's... I find it legit.
I mean, so another thing it reminded me of is the... I only have vague memories, but the Red Letter Media reviews for the Star Wars prequels... Has anyone seen them?
No.
What about the Star Wars prequels?
The Red Letter Media reviews of the Star Wars prequels.
The what?
It's a Red Letter Media, say, like, I don't know, thing, a YouTube series kind of production company, whatever, and they did reviews of the Star Wars prequels. They're a really weird style. They're entertaining.
Okay.
Just go into it expecting to be really weird. They're, like, longer than the movies themselves, I think, or as long as the movies. They point out lots of... There's lots of good criticism analysis in there. Also, lots of weird... There's, like, a story to the review that involves, like, this... basically, the reviewer is a character, and this character, like, has someone tied up in their basement, and it's weird.
Really?
It's very strange, but it does get into pretty good analysis and criticism. And one of the things is that, like, they point out, like, can you name characteristics of any of the prequel characters? I think they're talking about episode one in particular, but, like, can you name characteristics that are not, like, their name and their job? And that might not be exactly the criteria. I forget this is what reminded me of. It's like, I can't really name things about the digital world aside from, like...
Yeah.
Desert.
Yeah.
Wait. Okay. Jeff, what about Hogwarts? Would you consider Hogwarts not a character?
I still think it's like the group of, like, the collection of people is what I consider Hogwarts
really?
To be.
Really?
I'm about to get Ashley's attention. What about any of the settings in the Hunger Games?
No, I don't consider them characters.
I would not consider them characters either.
Because
they're always manufactured as tools of the people. They're not...
Yeah.
They don't...
There's like a one-way transaction there.
No, actually, I feel like this is the first thing that's actually come closest to me is like the catching fire arena in how it's like constantly changing and they're trying to avoid it. And
But it's programmed by
humans. It's programmed, but like it's not like it has sentience. I'm not saying it has sentience, but it is definitely like it is almost like a contestant they're fighting against. Like they're fighting against it in such a way that it's not. Like they're fighting against the digital world in some sense here for survival, but like fighting in the arena is like very much almost like they're fighting against the other combatants, but like they team up and also fight against the arena. I don't know.
They do also fight against the arena. It doesn't feel like a character to me.
Yeah, I still don't think it crosses the line for me, but I feel like it's closer than digital world to me.
I think we have very different criteria for characters, and actually, if we want to have this discussion, we should lay those out.
Yeah. Let's move on, because we don't have much time, and I'm running out of battery. Ashley, do you want to describe your playground thingy? It's just a long rant of you being mad.
Well, I feel like I actually went on a midnight rant in which I related the way that I feel about Kill la Kill to, like, the female characters and their portrayal in Kill la Kill to Rika, because it really clarified what I dislike about it. And without spoiling too much about Kill la Kill or whatever, like, Kill la Kill is clearly a satire. There are upsetting things that happen to the characters, but they all feel like they are working towards, like, specifically subverting those troubling things. I think there are many layers to this satire. Not all of them work as well as others. Some of them are not subverted. But, like, the important thing to me is that anytime, like, Mako or Ryuko or Satsuki have, like, a triumphant moment in which they did greatly suffer to achieve normally, like, you just feel so happy for them. You're like, yes, this is, everything about this is great.
Yeah.
Whereas with Rika, part of the things seem like they're a commentary. Like, I think there is a commentary on the power of female friendship that's going on there. And I think that Konaka is a very keen observer of human behavior to so, like, greatly capture the problems of gender. But just, like, capturing the problems of gender is not a commentary on them. It's just like, yeah, I saw kids do this and I replicated it in an anime. And so anytime that Rika, like, achieves something or wins a battle, I'm just kind of like, it's not like, I'm so happy for you, Rika. It's like, oh my god, I'm glad you survived that, Rika. Like, I was really scared there for a sec that you were going to, like, lose your soul or something. Like, And I think my final point of it was just that, like, in a world where Rika is the top card master, but, like, the show portrays her so inconsistently that that doesn't seem true. And also her, like, main, she's only that because the main person who actually is the top card master just isn't there. And she has to confront him. And she eventually, like, comes to love him. It's just, like, there's no way that Rika's ever going to win anything in that situation. And just, like, ugh. So, like, her confidence is just always going to get crushed in a situation where all of those constraints are put upon her. And in the way that I've said this before in the podcast, but, like, in the way that I think there's a commentary on female friendship, I do not feel similarly. I mean, maybe there's an argument to be made about Kazuma and Kenta, but I do not feel that, like, their friendship is some sort of commentary on, like, how gender plays out for boys. It just isn't, like, I feel like it just plays out how you would expect it to in the end. So, like, because in Kill la Kill, it feels like there's very much a clear goal to talk about men's sexuality and their relationship to clothing and being objectified as well, whereas I don't feel that there is equal attention paid here to the male gender. So, like, Rika cannot be, you know, the carrier of all gender discussion and, like, be a subversion of it. Just because she's, like, a duty boy, like, doesn't add up. That's all I had to say.
One thing I had to say was just that, like, comparing Kill la Kill's how much you feel for the characters when they achieve something versus how much we feel for Rika in the show when they achieve something, I feel like is in some ways not entirely fair comparison, just because Kill la Kill excels at that catharsis of victory in a way that Digimon, I think at any point, really never does. Like, I think that Kill la Kill gets you hype for a victory much more than Digimon ever does. So I feel like that didn't make me be like, huh, I don't really feel like any of her victories made me be like, oh yeah, fist pump. But kind of, I don't feel like that for any of the Digimon tamers.
Oh, you don't? Okay, because I do feel like Takato has had a couple moments where, like, all right, that was your hero moment, while we have not had that.
Right, right. I don't feel like the same fist pumpiness, but yeah, I definitely feel like there is a preferential, like, there's less of that for Rika. Even though there's not much in any of Digimon, I feel like there's still less for Rika. Or the Takato gets more.
Well, I guess the troubling point is, like, to Asher's suffering point. Like, I really feel like the point of Rika's victories is this sort of, I think I wrote this down, like the what doesn't kill you makes you stronger type of strength, which is actually like totally BS strength. That is not true. There are many things that will not kill you that will in fact destroy some part of you, like your mental health or some other aspect of you. That doesn't make you stronger. Whereas like people in Kill la Kill suffer. There is like sexual abuse that happens. Like they're always like fighting each other. Ryuko at one point almost gets like possessed and destroyed. Like there is a lot of suffering there, but at the same time it feels like they overcome that in like a much healthier way than Rika ever does.
It also feels like Rika doesn't get to own her victories. Her victories always seem to be losses also, like yeah, simultaneously. Like, she loses some pride. She loses, you know,
if she starts as a confident character, like I think that she has plenty of confidence in herself, but I think it's like you're supposed to slowly chip away at that because of the way that the show presents it as like Rika is wrong about something consistently.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore it's just like constantly chips away at that confidence that she has.
Yeah, I feel like both Ryuko in Kill la Kill and Rika in Tamers have arcs of like starting off very confident and not being really open to other people, and at the end being very open to other people. And I feel like Ryuko throughout like stays as badass and confident, and Rika like trades that compassion for confidence.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
It's like she's trained out of it, which is super uncomfortable in a lot of ways.
Whereas Ryuko is allowed to have both.
Yeah.
Like Ryuko frequently shows compassion to especially Mako. Like she's allowed to possess both and be like, I am still great.
Like, right. And yeah, I think she has compassion to Mako from the onset. But like, I think it's like towards the end where it really becomes like, you know, I appreciate everyone here, kind of.
Right. I mean, it's like she, like the initial tension is with her and the sailor suit that like is sentient to her, apparently. And she's like not into that initially, but then is quickly like, we are best buddies. Like, what's up?
Part of this, just making me think about how like a lot of the reasons that Kill la Kill came out the way it did is because it was, I think if I'm recalling correctly, it was planned to not be, like Rika was not planned to be female from the start.
Really?
I thought I heard that. Did I make that up?
Oh, what? Well, that's messed up.
Well, that would be way weird.
Maybe I'm making this up. Maybe I'm just, okay, I'm going to edit that out because I'm not. Maybe it was like that they wrote her as if she were a man and then just like change the gender, but like it is also critical to the story, so I don't see how that would have, maybe it's just that it feels that way.
I mean I like the way it plays out, but I dislike that is the culture we live in where you have to write someone as a man in order to give them any agency.
Actually at work today we were talking about it's like it's not inherently troubling, but the troubling trend of like in order to be diverse now, like male comic book heroes are now just becoming female in some way, like in the Marvel universe and stuff. Like, yeah, like Thor, and then there was some new one recently, I think. And it's like, it's like the way to solve diversity is not to take a male character and then swap their gender. It's like to make new female characters that are just as great as those characters.
I can understand why they do that though, because giving a female character an established, like a popular established name is also like good.
I mean, I understand it from a marketing perspective, but like, I feel like there's also a troubling trend of like She-Hulk and like, like female counterparts to a male default, but where you only point out the female part.
Superheroes do get cycled out after a while, like they die. So, like, somebody else comes in and takes their place. So I'm actually quite happy for female heroes to be doing that sort of work. I really dislike the counterpart thing.
Because they're always a lesser counterpart.
That's an old trend. Yeah. They're always a lesser counterpart, yes.
I don't know, but they're both trends that is, like, there's something that's, like, there's definitely something to be desired about both of them.
The problem is, like, it is more difficult to sell.
Yeah.
Lots of problems with that.
Sad.
So we had one unanswered question that I wanted to talk about, which was from Psychic Echo on our forum. And so the basic question was about time flowing differently in the digital world, which at first I was reading, I was like, of course it doesn't. Like, I mean, that's a thing from Adventure, but like, it doesn't mean it applies to this universe too. Like, I don't know what evidence there is for that. But then they had a really good point, so I want to read it. I only have this question because of a throwaway dub joke about Gigimon and Babamon having been married for 50 years. It's just a joke, but it does raise legitimate questions, which are never answered about the flow of time in the digital world. How can they be married for 50 years if the first Digimon didn't exist until approximately 20 years before? And I'm like, oh crap, that totally.
Do we know for a fact? Oh yeah, we do know. Well.
I mean, it could be different in the dub, possibly, but like the there is a novel by, it's a really short novel, it's a tiny novel, written by Konaka, called Digimon Tamers: 1984, which is about what the Monster Makers / Wild Bunch do in 1984 to create them.
Right. But my understanding was actually that Digimon existed in maybe another form before digital anything existed. Like, their information.
I think that's what, like, Adventure kind of described.
Oh, was that an Adventure thing? I thought it might have come up in Tamers, is why I...
I don't think so.
Well, the Devas were based on the Devas.
Right.
But that's like...
I mean, they're based on, ironically, on the concept of the Sanskrit Devas, so what if... the concept of an old married couple turned into Gigi and Babamon.
So what you're saying is that, like, when they were formed as Digimon, they're like, we believe we are this thing that is... I didn't get the sense that the Devas were, like, thought that they were the myth from human mythology. I thought they were just, like, happened to be based on that.
No, yeah. I feel like there was something there before it became the digital world, is my understanding.
I don't think that's from Tamers.
Like, information or a concept.
Because, I mean, okay, this is going back to Adventure 2, actually, because the digital world has some of the wish world's power. So, like, it's not pure data. How did the data get there anyway? Like, what is data? Does it have to be a digital thing?
I mean, I think there's a plausible... I don't think they ever connect the dots, but I think you can easily connect the dots about the Devas being based on human mythology to say that, like, you know, if the digital world indexes human data, that, like,
right, they could be based on internet.
Stories. Well, like, if it's, like, you know, compiling stories and then, like, basing things from those stories, even though... I mean, they're supposed to be confused because they're like, we designed these initial Digimon, and, like, then they kind of gain sentience. And it would make sense for them to, as part of the gain sentience, like, consume stories in the human world and base themselves on that.
Or consume and become, because they are made of information. So if they're eating stories, you are what you eat.
Yeah, so then maybe that story is like, they didn't, like, not that Gigimon and Babamon actually have lived 50 years, but like, they became the story of a husband and wife that have been living 50 years, and that's just like...
That could be it.
That's like a sad state. Like, they don't actually have a history, they just like think they do because they...
Well, maybe that's why the digital... No, but they do have a history. It's just not one they physically lived. But maybe that's why the digital world is so barren, is because it's so new. I mean, also because it's getting destroyed by Juggernaut, but, you know.
Or something.
Yeah, not really Juggernaut.
Whatever.
Side note, like, when we're recording this, we have recorded up through 309, and there is, like, still zero... There's, like, some subtext about seeing the, like... faded parts of the world that are like, you know, like, look like they're about being deleted or whatever, but there's like no mention of what's actually going on, which is going to be revealed in the next episode we record. And I'm just like, this is set up so poorly, like, anyway,
shocking.
So now comments, general comments from listeners. So this first comment is from Psychic Echo, and it's basically describing a cool alternate scenario that could have played out with Ryo that I think was cool. So here's what they said. Ryo could literally be removed from the story, and we'd lose almost nothing. In fact, we could have actually gained something for Kazu and Kenta's development as characters by leaving him out of the story. Rika ditches the two of them after getting fed up with basically having to save their butts with no thanks given, and the two of them have to find their way back to the others in a dangerous digital world. Instead, they just go from being protected by one person to the next, and never once having to face the idea of how dangerous it could be running recklessly into situations with overconfidence, but no means to protect themselves. As well, it creates an opportunity for Rika to gain respect from them that she deserves. Unfortunately, we're not given this, and Kazu and Kenta remain the same jerks they've always been, and literally learn nothing. Yeah.
Yep.
And we talked in the episode about overconfidence and stuff, and that is interesting how this tied back into it, because, like, I hadn't thought about how Kazu and Kenta, you know, they never learned to not be overconfident, and they just, like, passed off from protector to protector, and...
Yep. And, you know, Tamers would be so much better without Ryo in it.
Throw him down.
Everything about it would be better.
I think Kanaka would agree with you, begrudgingly. in case I think we're pulling that out of... Pulling it out of my, is there a polite way to say that? Anyway, that phrase, I'm not going to say. In Kanaka's notes, which I'll link to on the site, there's a description of how he, in planning the series, is like, I didn't plan this, but I was forced to do it. And, but I think he said that it was like from the early stage. It wasn't like midway through the season. They're like, you need to put this in there. He was like, that was the one thing when developing the season. They're like, this must be in the season, I think was how it was described. So we kind of could have integrated that in better if they knew that from the start. So kind of all, it's not like Kanaka's free of blame from that. Like, his job is kind of to integrate that well.
But it makes me feel better that he didn't want Ryo there.
Yeah. I feel better about his observations of humans that he didn't want Ryo there.
Oh, so I guess what they say, I'm looking at Kanaka's notes now, and one detail I forgot was that he didn't handle any of Ryo's character development. That was a different writer. He was like, I let Motoki Yoshimura handle all of Ryo's character development, as he was a screenwriter for the episode where he first appears.
He just did not care about this kid.
But there's also a comment about how his character differs from his character in the WonderSwan games, that, like, in Kanaka's notes, he says, Ryo's refreshingly confident personality doesn't contradict the character from the WonderSwan game, but I still feel that it made him uniquely part of the Digimon Tamers world. So I guess he actually likes the confident personality, like, thought that made him a better fit for Tamers, which is what we find really frustrating about it.
Well, I mean, it depends on what he was like in the WonderSwan games. If he was super annoying, I wouldn't have liked him there either.
I think he's more generic and, like, protagonist-y.
Ew, well, I don't like that either.
I mean, that's how he feels. I mean, this is what he's generic and protagonist-y in Tamers.
He's a little bit pompous, though. He's like...
Well, we read him as pompous.
I mean, I think they have to take it to an extreme because he's not actually the main character.
Sure. Okay, so the next comment is also from Psychic Echo, and... This is talking more about Ryo and frustration with Ryo. And so they said, having mystery to a new character is good until it becomes revealed that he's something of a celebrity. Then it becomes an issue. If he's so famous and apparently has this history with Rika, having beaten her at the card game tournament some time ago, then why the heck have we not heard anything of him before this point? So what I want to ask everyone else is, like, what do we think about, like, does it feel like Ryo came out of the blue? Does it feel like something that should have come up before if he exists in the world? Okay.
Yes.
I was kind of conflicted about this because, like, I feel like he doesn't really, like, it's not like the kids normally talk, like, it doesn't, like, they don't talk about their heroes in the card game anyway.
I feel like there was one scene before Ryo shows up in which Kazu is like, you lost, like, to Rika, is like, well, you're not even actually the champion or whatever, because there is Ryo somewhere. Was it in that episode?
I think it was.
Maybe, probably.
Yeah, I think it was after he was introduced here. It wasn't like...
What?
It wasn't like setting up or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think if he was around, he should have come up, especially if he was like so key to some of Rika's confidence issues.
Well, I think that's actually, it's like the opposite. It's like if he was missing that whole time and Rika was like, yeah, like only one because he was missing, like, wouldn't they be like, what the heck? What happened to this dude? Where'd he go?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Or wouldn't they guess that, like, if the strongest Digimon come to the real world, the human world, wouldn't you kind of guess, like, the strongest Digimon card play, whatever, mysteriously disappears for some time? Wouldn't you be like, okay, maybe he went to the digital world. Maybe, if we know that's a thing. Maybe that happened. Maybe we'll look out for him. But that never comes up.
So. Yeah. So, like...
No, he just didn't exist.
Yeah, the fact that he both was apparently a hero to Kazu and Kenta, a, like, sore point for Rika, and went missing for several months, and none of those parties, like, brought it up, even though they were walking around together for a while, is like, okay. That doesn't make any sense.
This is also not my biggest problem with Ryo, so...
I just feel like it's not like Kazu and Kenta frequently talk about their heroes. It's not like Rika frequently talks about people like this. I feel like it would be easy for them to
write
this in.
But that's a failing of the writing. Like,
what I mean is that, like, it doesn't seem like the kind of thing that would be a topic of conversation normally. So it doesn't
sure
seem like
it, would.
It doesn't seem like it.
I can totally see Rika, like, going on a random rant about
or
silly Ryo.
Yeah, or Kazu and Kenta, or even Takato, like, bringing up Ryo to challenge her authority, especially at the beginning.
No, it's not. I could see them, like, playing together and being like, well, I'm going to be like Ryo
I think my point's not coming across well. What I'm saying, I think it would be really easy to write in a scene. It would be totally plausible if they did bring it up, but it does not fit the kind of detail that, like, is implausible for not bringing up. That makes sense. That, like, it doesn't feel like... like, it doesn't. We haven't seen every interaction of this type. We haven't seen, like, Kazuma Kenta, like, all of their interactions playing cards with themselves where they would have, like, been, like...
You are thinking of it as, like, these characters, like, somehow choose what we... Like, it is a failing of the writers of the story to not bring these up.
This is not coming across. Like, I'm saying... I'm not saying that means it's set up well. I'm still saying it's set up poorly. What I'm saying is that, like... The feeling of it coming out of the blue or feeling like it definitely should have come up before, that's kind of how I'm assessing that. That, like, it, to me, it doesn't feel like it came out of the blue unless it's something that, like, you feel like you definitely would have talked about this and that conversation would have been on screen. Instead, I'm like, you probably would have talked about this, but it might not have been on screen.
No, I think it would.
Yeah, I disagree with you. I absolutely think it would have. Had it had anybody, like, I do not at all... see a situation in which those conversations are out of character for any of those characters.
Right. I'm not saying those conversations are out of character, Ashley. I'm saying those are not the conversations that are so crucial that they would have to be the ones that were on screen.
Yes, they are.
Yes, they are.
If you introduce a character,
your argument doesn't make sense.
It definitely does not set up the character well. What I'm saying is, like, having this character come out now does not feel like it's like you're betraying what you've set up of the world. It feels like this is poorly set up.
But they should have set it up.
Yes, I'm agreeing. They definitely should have set it up. But what I'm saying is that, like, his existence now doesn't feel like you've betrayed what you set up before. It feels like sloppy writing, but not like...
Given the high inconsistency of Rika's character, I do feel like it contradicts the setup of the world. Like, it is just like, I can do whatever to Rika because I just make up things that come along.
I definitely see the point more for Rika than for, like, how Kazuma Kenta, because, like, I don't think we've seen lots of Kazuma Kenta's interactions. There are a lot of them, it's off screen, so it makes sense for that. But, like, for Rika, like, everything we've seen of her is, like, she is the champion,
but, like, who constantly has to defend that she's the champion because nobody, like, accepts that.
Right.
Yeah, it really should have come up before this.
And if part of the reason that nobody accepts it is because, like, Ryo just doesn't appear in the tournament to go beat her, it's like, that definitely should have been a thing.
Yeah, that too. But yeah, I guess the conclusion, my point was that, like, it would be totally easy for that. Like, it's so natural that, like, even though I was arguing that I think it's okay for it to come out of the blue now, it would have been so easy to write it in beforehand. Like, there would have been so many places where it would have made sense for them to have that conversation. And yeah, it's frustrating it didn't.
And I just, like, there's no advantage. I mean, I guess there's some advantage to having Ryo be a surprise if you have familiarity with him before from the WonderSwan games. Like, I guess that's fun.
Oh, but I feel like actually if they had set it up in, like, if they just let teases in before and been like, you know, just like dropped hints that, like, Ryo is a character in this world, and, like, maybe you don't, like, they just say the name Ryo, so you don't even know if it's the same Ryo, and you're like, wait,
would've been good.
Is that like a different character named Ryo, or is that like, wait, is Ryo in this universe? Like, you'd be like so intrigued, and you'd be like, you'd want to see what happens next, you'd want to see if he becomes a character. Like, that would be so much more enticing, especially if you knew who Ryo was.
Totally. As it is, it's sloppy.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, it would help Ryo's character so much more to, like, see how he has affected the current characters before he magically appears and they're all like, oh wait, Ryo, hey, you actually, like, greatly affected my life. Like, what?
Yeah. It also is, like, a kind of betrayal that none of these characters that are, like, massive Digimon, Takata is the only one's, like, a massive Digimon fan, but, like, I guess it's unclear in the Japanese version, at least until the crossover episode, and is more clear in the dub version that the TV show exists in this universe. But it's very clear in the dub that the TV show is in this universe. And, like, Takato is the ultimate Digimon fan, but he doesn't know who Ryo is from watching Adventure and 02. Maybe the WonderSwan games don't exist in the universe, but, like, he should not just be like, you're cool.
I mean, okay, no, but this brings up a sore point for me that I've been thinking is, like, I feel like everybody who critiques us on us not knowing, like, Ryo because he was in the WonderSwan games, and, like, Japanese fans would know who he was, so that would affect your reading. It's like, I do not buy for a second that, like, every single Japanese fan of Digimon went out and played this game on a console that apparently did not sell that well. And so just, like, I just feel like everybody is overhyping how much everybody knew about this character.
Well, so I think they're
like retrospect goggles.
And there are a couple of different factors going on. There's like the entire premise. So what I understand the situation is that the way these kind of tie-ins work, maybe Andrew, you can chime into this to confirm or deny, but like the way these kind of tie-ins work is that the anime is the most has the broadest demographic, and that the other things like games and manga and stuff still sell really well, but like aren't as broad and don't have much exposure as anime. So you have the tie-ins of the anime to kind of promote people to go buy their stuff. That's why you get like manga series that run for a really long time, but the anime is only a short running thing. It's kind of functions as like an advertisement for the manga. And so what it feels like, what Ryo's appearance feels like, is like this is the broadest way that people can find out about Ryo to then go buy the WonderSwan games to learn more about him. And if that's true, like definitely seems clear from that, there's more people who are seeing the anime than who have played the games, almost by definition.
So in that, it's like it is reversed from the common narrative that everybody tries to say, which is Ryo, like everybody already knew Ryo.
Right.
It's like the opposite. It's like he is the ad in the anime for people to go find out about Ryo.
I think the Japanese hardcore fans who played everything would have known who he was. But like, and also, I forget how many games have come out by that point. I think his first appearance in 02, like in the background of that one scene, was before the game where that scene was explained. Like, I think the first one came out at that point, and then the scene appeared, and the second one explaining that scene came out, and then the third one, and then I think the fourth one that involved Tamers came out during the Tamer season. Anyway, that's not really relevant. But, I mean, according to Kanaka describes Ryo as, like, says Ryo was a very popular character in Japan. So, like, maybe people are interpreting that to mean, like, he was super popular, but I think it might just mean, like, he was popular relative to the demographic of people who normally play video games. Like maybe he served his purpose well as a character in the video games, not like a character that everyone in Japan knew about. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm going to read this. So this is the last comment from Psycho Echo. And they said, most of Ryo being considered an interesting character, even as great a tamer or as good at the card game as he's being praised for and admired by, Tarika's irritation relies on telling rather than showing. Sure, we're told he's so great, like repeatedly, but when it comes down to it, we're not really shown much in the two episodes he's on, why he's a great tamer, or how he's any different from the others. I mean, aside from using special cards and having a partner who is already at the ultimate level, he really doesn't do anything different other than make Cyberjumon go Goliath-sized with some special modified cards. Sure, Cyberjumon defeated the Dragon David by himself, but technically WarGreymon, Rapidmon, and Daomon have all defeated at least one David by themselves, too. We're told that the cards which Ryo uses are special and all, but I mean, since we're not given any explanation of what makes them any more special than any other cards, and why only the experienced tamers can master this card, it's still a modified card which Rika, Takada, and Henry have been using all along. And what's to say that the three of them couldn't use those type of cards if they wanted to? So, I mean, I totally agree with all this. I think it's a great example of telling instead of showing and the faults of that. And also just they tell poorly. Because, like, oh my god, the modified card, like, why? Even if it's a rarity thing and it's, like, you only get the special card by winning the tournament, which means you're really good, like, anyone could just take the card and use it. It doesn't mean it's a special tamer for using the card. Arr.
I mean, but, okay, see, this is exactly the thing. Like, I feel like that's perfectly fine. I actually don't feel like that's telling. I feel like that's showing. It is just poor in relation to what they do with Rika, which is, like, they frequently tell you that Rika is also really good at this card game and frequently do not show you her effectively using any cards.
Well, okay, so I think this is an example where, like, they're saying Ryo is really good at saying really, really, really good, and they show him doing the thing that, like, is supposed to be the thing that proves he's really good. Like, I guess they're trying to show you, they're trying to give you the proof that, like, allows you to connect the dots and be like, yes, I agree with you, I agree with what you told me. And I'm just like, I do not agree, like, that is not that special. I think this must have been what prompted that conversation, because we talked about it a couple days ago, but it reminded me most of, what's the movie called, Stranger Than Fiction, the, like, Will Ferrell movie about where he's, like, writing a book and then finds out that the book is actually affecting his life or whatever. Like, he's living in the book he's writing.
He is the character in the book.
Right. He's the protagonist of his own book that he's writing, right?
No, someone else is writing.
Oh, someone else is writing it, right. Like, and he, like, talks to the author and stuff. Yeah. And anyway, so, like, in the plot of that movie, like, the writer writes the end of the book, and the character who is the character in the book is kind of like, something bad happens to him. He's like, I don't want this to happen. But, like, everyone who reads it is like, no, but this, like, ending is so amazing. It's so literarily powerful. Like, it's going to be transcendent. Like, it needs to be published. You have to do it, even if it hurts the character, or it hurts the real person in real life. like, you have to publish it because it's so amazing. And it, then they show it, and it was like, what? That was it? That was what you're building up to? Like that's what this feels like. It's like, Ryo's so amazing. Ryo's so amazing. That's how he's amazing? What? No.
No, but the difference between this and Ryo is that she changed the ending.
Yeah, so, I mean, the point is that she didn't do the litter, the crazy...
Wait, really?
He was supposed to die, but...
Oh, no, but... Okay, so... I guess spoilers for this movie, but yeah, even if whatever, it as I recall, it's like he was supposed to get hit by something and die.
He got hit by a bus.
Right, but so it changes that he got hit by a bus and didn't die, and I'm like, but still the story of he got hit by a bus and died is not a good ending. Like, it's still not an amazing ending. Like, it's still, right, regardless of whether she changed it or not, like, it's still, when they showed what they built it up to, it was still disappointing. I think this is inevitable in you when you have stories about writing or about jokes or things, and you have the characters describing a joke as being really great, and then you're like, okay, what's the actual jokes? And you're like, these are terrible. And it's a common problem when you have meta. They built up a thing, then they reveal what the thing was, and it was very disappointing.
For you, maybe.
I mean...
But I think it's the same as what they always do with Rika. They always build her up as saying she's so amazing, and then whenever they show her, they don't show her being amazing. At least here, they try to show Ryo being amazing.
Sure, like, that's why I'm like, I do not inherently think this Ryo thing is the thing that is the problem. It is the inconsistency with the other characters and right. their ability to use the cards that is the true problem.
Right, like, the whole thing is just, they're just bad at showing capability, and they keep consistently talking about it as if there is a clear, I don't know, power hierarchy.
Yeah, and, like, when you don't consistently show who is good at the cards and who is not, then, like, showing that Ryo effectively used this one card is not an effective way to convey that he is amazing.
It's also just like, shouldn't the ability or skill at the card game be very different than the ability or skill at being a tamer and, like, randomly choosing a modified card? Like, those are so different. To equate them is just the...
Whatever.
So, there's one last comment.
We received a comment on Facebook from Corrine that was, wish you had dug into the episodes a bit more, especially 26. Seems no one takes the time to validate or delve into Kazu and Kenta's friendship / relationship. Just food for thought. I mean, I think it's clear that none of us particularly is endeared to Kazu and Kenta. I can agree that there is something in their friendship that I think is supposed to be a foil, maybe, to Jerry and Rika's friendship. But in general, I just kind of feel like they are a typical dude pair there for laughs.
That was going through my head, like, that it's not out of the norm. Like, it feels very typical. It feels like the kind of relationship we see a lot of in things like this. So that's, I think, why it's not something that, like, strikes me as particularly comment-worthy when we're watching episodes and stuff. Like, it's nice that they're friendly and close friends, but... And, like, what we talked about in the episode, it's like, each of them on their own I like as characters, but together they are obnoxious. So it's like, even if you look inside the friendship and you're like, okay, but the two of them, like, are, like, is it nice that they... Like, is their friendship to each other nice? Sure, but the way that they as a unit interact with everyone else, I find obnoxious. So I'm like...
Yeah. I'm also now just thinking that I'm more disappointed maybe that we didn't talk about it for episode 309. Like, how their interactions change once Kazu gets a Digimon partner mm-hmm. while Kenta does not have one. Seems far more interesting to me.
Yeah. So, look forward to us not talking about it.
Next feedback episode, more Kazu and Kenta talk.
I just feel like, from what I recall, there's not enough, like, time for them to explore that. Like, they don't have much screen time where they...
Yeah, I mean, it's just them in the battle and, like, I don't know, Graumon, like, they're riding on Graumon at the top of one of the episodes, even though Gardramon's there, so it's not really, like, a effective, like, they've been separated, feel so different now.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think, theoretically, it is far more interesting, at least.
Right, but I don't think they have more things they're handling at that point in the show, so.
Yeah.
I don't know if they really tackle it. Let's move on to, I think we can just go to the outro, because.
Outro, yes.
You can find the full show notes for this episode by going to podigist.com/307.5. Let us know what you thought about this episode by leaving a comment there or via email, Reddit, or with the will.
Podigist is made possible with the support from our awesome Patreon, including Amanda Anjewoman, Andre LeDucman, David Graumon, Eric Angemon, Joe Keto, Jack Santa Agumon, Kailunamon, Kaiser Washi, Sam Kriwagamon, and Stevie Padamon.
If you want to support the show on Patreon, you can get some cool rewards, like access to our private Slack chat group for $1 a month, monthly stickers for $5 a month, and early episodes for $10 a month. We're only $6 away from our next goal, which will allow us to get new podcast artwork commissioned more frequently. So check out patreon.com/podigious.
You can find Podigious on Twitter, Tumblr, or Facebook to keep up with the Digimons and get funny images and GIFs related to the show. If you don't like how we pronounce GIF, then become a Patreon so you can vote on how we pronounce it. You can find me on Tumblr as Phantom Chalice Steph, Ash.
You can't find me anywhere. You can find me in bed.
Oh, yes.
With your mom.
Amazing.
Ashley.
AshMcD00 on Twitter.
And lastly, Jeff.
Asher Dashery on Tumblr.
You cannot find Jeff at Asher Dashery on Tumblr.
No, I love it. Please leave it like this.
And you can find Ash at Jeffly Jeff.
Yeah, great. Thanks.
Our Calamon artwork is by the awesome Mary Cagle, aka Cube Watermelon, on Tumblr and Twitter.
Share the podcast with your friends who come from an alternate universe and are really good at card games, but they're not really actually that good at it, but they say they're really good at it, and the universe you're in says they're really good at it, but they don't really see how they're good at it. Yeah, share the podcast with them. And join us next week as we play Okami. Bye!
Bye.
And remember, never stop digivolving. We are recording feedback, and I didn't remind any listeners to send in feedback because we have so much to talk about today. Welcome to Podigious. Okay, not too fast. Okay.
No, you always talk too fast. You need to stop listening to podcasts at double speed.
I don't think that's a problem.
Double speed, haha, triple speed.
He's at triple speed now?
I mean, it's like 2.5-ish. It varies based on the silence. So, yeah, we did get one, which was text meant to be read by Robot Mom. Sorry, I had to cough. and stuff came out of my mouth, which is gross. That's
thanks
the way, like,
for sharing.
I hate when, like, you go to cough and it's like, oh, stuff came out, and that's not what I wanted.
Well, technically, it is what you wanted.
I
wanted to, like, come out inside my throat and then, like, swallow it, or just, like, I don't know.
This conversation is disgusting. Hope it stays in the podcast.
Land on something I don't care about. Lay on Ashley's clothes.
That's disgusting.
I wanted to bring up Silk, but then I realized she's technically a counterpart to Spider-Man.
Oh, but like, she's literally cool.
She's adorable.
How is she selling, though?
How is she selling?
Yeah. Is she as popular as Spider-Man?
I know. I'm buying it.
Oh, okay. Can you bring that when we have our summer vacation or whatever? Because I would like to read it.
But it's physical comic issues.
Yes, that's why I asked you to bring it.
But it's not the beginning of her story.
Why don't you have the beginning of her story?
Because it's from, like, some convoluted Spider-Man crossover thing.
So get that.
Okay, I'm back.
No. I mean, it tells her origin, but it's not her first appearance.
Boo.
Okay, are we still talking about superheroes?
Yeah, well, Andrew won't share his comics with me.
It's kind of hard to bring, like, 15 issues of a comic book.
Sharing comics is illegal. You need to buy your own comic. You can only read it once and then burn it afterwards.
Truth.
Other than make Savagemon go Goliath-sized with some special modify cards. Sir Savagemon. Did I pronounce sure, sir?
Oh my God. You just did. That's the thing you just did.
Okay, good night.
Oh, we don't say Digivolve your differences anymore? No,
I don't know. I don't know if it actually
what
works.
Is the point of doing it?
I think it's funny the first couple of times. I don't know about beyond that.
Yeah, I think it's over.
Digivolve your similarities.
Oh, great.
That's like the Hydra universe version.